Alrighty, gang, welcome back to the Gutowski Files. Once again, starring our very own Stephen Gutowski. He is the founder, editor-in-chief over at TheReload.com. That's TheReload.com. If you haven't gone over there to give them a look, please do. And consider getting a membership. Stephen is doing the Lord's work, and his team, I should say, are doing the Lord's work. And without membership dues, they can't continue to do that work. So go give them a look over there. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Hold on, let me turn my fan off. I never claim to be a professional, folks. I never claim to be a professional at this.
But you hot out there in Arizona?
It's just, you know, it's the walk-in closet studio. That's part of the problem, is that it's very confined space. And, you know, as you know, I radiate excellence at all times, and that does, it does provide some heat. And so it's an issue. So we're gonna have to get some ventilation here, I think, at some point. Anyway, so this week we are talking about an article over at TheReload.com. It is a member exclusive, so it's exciting. We're going to share it with you guys. I got the newsletter, and the headline is, "Will Colorado Ban AR-15s Next?" The purpose of this article is to discuss, or the newsletter, is to discuss the possibility that Colorado wants to do a quote-unquote assault weapons ban. I always have to put the words assault weapons in quotes, because it's a different thing depending on where you are. And almost always the definition of assault weapon means there is a part on it that looks scary or something, but doesn't actually affect the lethality of said weapon. So Stephen, talk to us about what's going on over there in Colorado.
Yeah, this is a really good piece from our resident Colorado writer, actually, Jake Fogelman. I encourage people to read the whole thing. It is a member exclusive, like you mentioned, but definitely worth the cost of admission on this one. I think, you know, he gets into a lot more than what we're going to talk about today, but yeah, there, for the first time in Colorado, they have passed an assault weapons ban. As you said, the definition of assault weapons ban is a bit nebulous and varies from state to state, but generally it includes semi-automatic center-fired firearms that have certain features, cosmetic and ergonomic features like pistol grips or telescoping stocks, or the ability to accept a detachable magazine is one of the right characteristics that usually goes into it. But anyway, you know, they're targeting things like AR-15s and AK-47s and firearms like that, although in practice usually affects a lot more than just those couple very well-known guns.
Right.
But it passed the House for the first time in Colorado. And so there's certainly some reason to think it could make it into law this year, this session. However, as Jake explains, there are a number of reasons to think that it may not.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, why not? Because I did look at some other articles before we talked, and even the people on the Democrat side are kind of admitting this is not going to pass right this minute. But we spoke before we hit the record button, and you kind of alluded to the fact that momentum is sort of building towards this, like momentum has built in the past for permitless carry in a lot of more red states. So do you feel like this is inevitable or likely to happen in a year or two or three?
I think there are pretty good reasons to think it won't happen this year. The first one being, for instance, that the House is more liberal than the Senate in Colorado, even though all of the state government there is controlled by the Democratic Party, which has increasingly become in favor, sort of uniformly almost, of these sorts of bans. They've seen a bit of a resurgence, as I'll get into. But at the same time, the Senate is not as perhaps amenable to this particular policy, and so it doesn't even have a co-sponsor there yet. It probably will get one, I'm sure. But whether it can actually pass that body is another question at this point. And then the governor is also another hurdle for this. You know, it was widely believed to be that he kept this from progressing last year. It's unclear if he would sign something like this if it made it to its desk, or if maybe he's working to keep that from happening. But
this is a Democratic governor,
it is,
right? Jared Polis.
Yeah, Jared Polis. Now, but he is perhaps positioning himself as a little bit more in the center left part of his party. And that's where, you know, he's signed a lot of gun control bills, to be clear. Colorado has expanded its gun restrictions since he's been governor. So it's not as though he's not willing to do that. But he may be trying to find a more centrist path on the issue than what you've seen in some of the other states that have adopted this lately. I mean, you know, going back to that resurgence idea for assault weapons bans, you know, there was really a 30-year period where you didn't see any of these come up at the federal or state level, really. Most of the assault weapons bans we have now, and I believe there's 11 of them, they were passed in the 90s. And it was only recently that you started seeing states, even pretty deep blue states, for instance, Illinois, mm-hmm. just passed their first assault weapons ban last year. So they've had a very recent resurgence at the state level, but they've picked up a bit of momentum. Delaware's banned assault weapons. It has become a more more uniform policy position for Democratic lawmakers to hold in lots of different states. Even here in Virginia, where I am, the state Congress passed an assault weapons ban. Now, it was just vetoed by the governor, who is a Republican, Glenn Youngkin, but it gives you an idea of even in a sort of more purple state like Virginia, you're seeing these policies get through legislatures. And that's where, just like permitless carry, you could see that same sort of trend happen on the left. You know, permitless carry, we'll give you an example from this year, right? South Carolina just adopted permitless carry. Hmm. Now, South Carolina had triple red, you know, they've been the state government controlled by Republicans for quite a while, and they had not passed permitless carry. But as they became one of the last Republican states to be a holdout on that policy, I think it became more difficult to be that holdout. And this is, you'll see a similar effect, I think, on the left, in that if more and more blue states adopt assault weapons bans, it's going to be harder and harder for the ones that haven't to resist that kind of pressure.
Can we expect at some point that these bans will make it to the Supreme Court? There's got to, you know, the states that have almost zero restrictions on guns and the states that have these in my opinion, insane assault weapons bans. At some point, the federal law has to work this out, right? I mean, having two different sets of, I'm all for local areas having control over their local area, right? But having, you know, something be completely acceptable in one state and an absolute felony in another, is the Supreme Court going to get involved in this at some point, in your opinion?
Probably at some point. Now, when that will be is the bigger question. Sure. What the Supreme Court likes to have when it decides to take up a case is what's called a circuit split. Mm-hmm. So the federal court system, right, is made up of a bunch of different circuits that cover only a handful of states. So, you know, there's, everybody's heard of the Ninth Circuit, right? Because that's California,
right?
And a couple other states, Hawaii and Oregon and Washington are in there. And so there's a bunch of circuits, and the Supreme Court is kind of the court where you go after several of those lower circuits come to a different conclusion on the same question. And the problem here that gun rights activists face is that it doesn't appear so far that the circuits where these cases are being decided, because then Jake has written extensively about this as well over at The Reload, but mm-hmm. There's a geographical issue that you run into, which is that only the more liberal states have passed assault weapons bans. And the way the federal court nomination system works is that the states where a federal circuit is overseeing, they get a say in who gets to be on those circuits, or traditionally right. They have. There's been some changes on this the last couple of years, but as Congress has kind of become more partisan in everything that it does. But traditionally, the senators from the states where somebody is going to be operating as a federal judge, they will have at least some say, even if they're not the same party as the president who's nominating a judicial appointee.
Right.
They'll have some say over who gets in that position, which means that, you know, circuits that oversee more liberal states tend to be more liberal, and circuits that oversee more conservative states tend to be more conservative. So the classic example of this would be the Ninth Circuit oversees California and a couple other states, and the Fifth Circuit oversees Texas and a couple other states. And so they tend to be on the polar opposite end of the sort of ideological spectrum when it comes to court rulings. And the issue that gun rights activists have is that you're likely to get a Ninth Circuit ruling. In fact, you are absolutely certain to get a Ninth Circuit ruling on the constitutionality of California or one of these other states in the circuit's assault weapons ban or their magazine ban. Duncan v. Bonta is probably the next big case that we're going to get out of the Ninth Circuit. And that's over magazine bans, which are really in the same category as an assault weapons ban. And often they accompany one another, right? Although Colorado, in this case, already has a magazine ban. They don't have an assault weapons ban, but they have a magazine ban. So you're going to get an opinion on that from the Ninth Circuit, but you can't from the Fifth Circuit, right? Because Texas doesn't have an assault weapons ban. They don't have a magazine ban. So Fifth Circuit's probably never going to weigh in on this, even though they might come to a very different conclusion about what's constitutional than the Ninth Circuit. So it's harder to produce that circuit split. And if you're only getting cases in more liberal states and more liberal circuits, they might all agree that these are still constitutional, even under the Supreme Court's Bruin precedent. Does that all make sense? I know it gets a little bit in the weeds there.
No, it does. It does. You're the best explainer of this that I've heard to date. So let me ask you this, who just was, or who was about to be on the Reload podcast? Tell our listeners so they can go check that out.
Yeah. This week we actually were talking about some good news for the NRA, right? They had a Supreme Court case. And just to be clear on the Supreme Court stuff, that's the circuit splits are your best avenue, I think, as a plaintiff to get up to the court.
Right.
There are other ways to get there, right? There was not necessarily a circuit split in this NRA case that we were talking about on my podcast this week, right? But the court can still take an appeal even if there's no circuit split. It'll often take appeals if they're from the government itself, the federal government, and they deal with federal law. The Supreme Court will take those kinds of cases almost uniformly. And so that's where things like the pistol brace ban or the bump stock ban, those cases that the federal government is asking the court to take, they're much more likely to take those ones up. So, or even Rahimi, the other Second Amendment case that the court has already heard the end of last year.
Right. That was the DV case, right? That awful case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The domestic violence restraining order case. That was a request from the federal government, from the Solicitor General. And so the court takes things up that way a lot too. Okay. It's just usually if you're just a regular plaintiff, your best hope is a circuit split, but not always. So for instance, this NRA case, not a Second Amendment case, interestingly, and probably a rare win for the NRA these days because they held oral arguments in that case. This is over New York officials, a financial official who pressured insurance companies into not working with the NRA.
Oh, that's right. We talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're a gun promotion, quote unquote, organization. So people remember that case I had on, a First Amendment scholar from an organization called FIRE, which many people might have heard of. They've traditionally done more work with campus speech issues. But in this case, they filed a brief supporting the NRA. And so, you know, we had their scholar, Bob Kornrevier from FIRE on the show to give his perspective on how oral arguments went and honestly, I think they went fairly well for the NRA. And I wouldn't be surprised if you got maybe even a 9-0 ruling. It's oral arguments. You can't, it's always dangerous to try and predict exactly what's going to happen based on oral arguments. You can't exactly know why a justice is asking questions the way they are. But, you know, the feeling, I think, was that the NRA's case was the stronger of the two First Amendment cases that they heard that day. The other one was that the social media case that maybe got more attention in the media. But I think the NRA had a seemed like the justices were a bit more sympathetic towards their claims in oral arguments. Bob breaks it down. He's much, I do gun stuff. This isn't technically gun related. I mean, it's gun related in that it's the NRA.
Sure.
And the speech was about guns, but it was mainly a First Amendment case. So he does a pretty good job of giving FIRE's perspective on the issue at the very least.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for all kinds of additional good news for the NRA moving forward. They've been through a lot, most of it self-induced in this host's opinion, by their board and their former leadership. But hopefully, I'm hoping we've turned a corner here and that they can start improving and people will start trusting them again and start re-upping their membership, because we've discussed this more than once on the show. They are the 800-pound gorilla. There's no other organization with that kind of reach, that kind of lobbying power, and that kind of money and membership. So, hopefully that'll be a thing.
It certainly could happen, right? The NRA has a very strong brand, and I think a lot of people agree with the mission. I think they probably would have to show some sort of reform has been done, and they haven't actually done anything, really. No changes at all from the outcome of that trial, and we still have another several months before we get to the sort of sentencing phase in the New York corruption trial. So they're kind of in limbo right now, and we had a story at the Reload about their fundraising. The political fundraising is down. They're actually falling behind the gun control groups now, which is not usual. And so,
right.
I don't know. We'll see. You know, it's I think it'd be a long road, but there's certainly potential that they could come back.
So you and I have already discussed being at the NRA annual meeting in Dallas this year and getting barbecue, hopefully.
Oh yeah.
Which I'm already looking forward to. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that already.
You gotta go to Heart Eight. I love that place.
Tucson is a wonderful place. Not a lot of really good barbecue options. John found a killer place up in Phoenix, and I'm not going to name it or else it'll be swamped, but that place is fantastic. So at the NRA meeting, do you anticipate there being any discussion, a repeat of the previous Dallas meeting where they had an insurrection, during the members meeting or anything like that, or no?
That was actually the Indianapolis meeting. You know, it's funny. They only move these to a couple cities now. I mean, they used to move around a little more. Now it's just Dallas, Houston, Indianapolis, Dallas, Houston, Indiana.
Right.
Like to give us a little more variety in where we travel. That's a bit of a, media person complaint, I guess, but
if we go back to Indianapolis, you and I both know where to go to get pizza and where not to go to get pizza. But that's
At least, you know, and Dallas, to be fair, not the barbecue capital, I think, of Texas. It's not Austin or whatever, but it's still Texas, so you can still get really better barbecue than almost anywhere else in the world. So we will be going to Heart Eight for sure. As for what's going to happen at the meeting, you know, a lot of the internal reform stuff has kind of waned in the 5 years this has been going on. So I don't know that we'll see a big blow up like we did in 2019. But I have been honestly, you know, I wasn't expecting anything last year, and you still got a pretty good
fireworks.
Yeah, pretty good back and forth from disgruntled members at the members meeting even last year. So you know, you never really know what's going to happen in that members meeting at this point, especially because the same people are still basically in leadership. Even though Wayne has resigned, it's a lot of his allies who still control the organization. So the people who have been upset about all this are still upset. You know, I don't think they've seen the kind of reform that they want to see. You know, I would expect it'll still be a pretty big event too. You know, that's another thing about the NRA is like they're shrinking, they're in trouble. But because they were so much bigger than everyone else to begin with, they're still much bigger. You know,
they had some buffer for sure.
The stuff about the political fundraising, like, yeah, they're down and they're losing to the gun control guys now. But you look at the other groups out there, every group you could think of, GOA, NAGR, NSSF, like none of those guys are raising money in the political realm anywhere close to what the NRA is still doing today. So,
yeah, absolutely. Folks, if you're lamenting the lack of down the middle, sane, sober reporting on the Second Amendment, go over to thereload.com. As I said at the top, I'll say it again at the bottom. Thereload.com, give them a look, consider getting a membership. You can actually be on the podcast just as a member. You don't have to almost die like you have to almost die to be on my show. So go check them out.
You could. I mean, if you have been in a self-defense, if you're on this, on the Ask podcast, and then you join the Reload, you could do both of them in theory.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'd be amazing. We have podcast tourism born. We're kind of like all the comedy podcasts I listen to. They all just go on each other's shows, like in a round robin fashion over and over again. But that's okay. It's always funny. All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching, especially if you're on the app. We appreciate that. This show is free on the app. So if you're coming over from the main channel, there's been a lot of consternation about having clips and stuff on our extra channel. Look, we're doing our best to bring you as much of this content as we can for free. So this is on the free tier of the app. So appreciate you watching. Consider getting a membership there as well. And Steven, as always, sir, you have the last word.
Absolutely.